Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Let's freaking go. Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness. I want to talk about LSU's MVP for the first couple of weeks. Okay. It's Xavion Thomas. Okay. Now, in actuality, it's probably Mansoor Delane or Garrett Nussmeier. Obviously, most quarterbacks are oftentimes the most valuable player on their team. But I want to start today's show with how Xavion Thomas has opened my eyes to a lot of different things in life. I really do mean this. It sounds like hyperbole, but it's true. You know, when we all go through life, we have to have different jobs, right? We all have a job now. And the truth is, and we probably all think this at a lot of different places of employment, that if we were to leave, we would be fine. And the company would be fine. And from an employer's view, your value to the company is oftentimes how many different things you can do to help that company make money or stay afloat. Or is there just one thing you are super duper good at that helps a company make money? That obviously increases your value. And Xavion Thomas is actually the latter. And not the former, but also he's a former and not the latter. There's quite a few things Xavion Thomas does well on this team, better than anyone else. But the truth is, his real value is how many different things he is able to do. So let's just take a look at the two Power Four games we have played up to this point in the season. And if you were to just look at Xavion Thomas's stats, they wouldn't be anything impressive. He has a touchdown. He has a few grabs, but he doesn't have the same receiving, raw receiving numbers like a guy like Aaron Anderson has. He doesn't have the same raw rushing numbers as a guy like Caden Durham. He doesn't have any spectacular punt return, but he has a few good ones that has helped with field position. But the truth is, there's really not a thing you can do in the game of football that Xavion Thomas has not done already, and we're only 3 weeks through the season, and we're only in this instance focusing on the two Power Four games. So versus Clemson, Xavion Thomas threw a pass that was completed. He also had three rushes for 26 yards. He also had a catch that got us a first down. But also in that game, he drew a pass interference flag to move the sticks. He also made a tackle. He was the one that tackled the Clemson defender after Chris Hilton inexplicably fumbled the ball and potentially saved a touchdown. He was the one that made that tackle. Okay? There are so many instances of when a wide receiver, after a fumble, is on the ground, doesn't do anything. He just ball watches. Xavion Thomas is always going after the football. Okay? So, he does so much little things, so many little things, that helps a team win. He's also a very good player. But, yes, it does seem it is a little redundant that we have two smaller slot kind of guys on the field a lot of the times with Aaron and Xavion. It does feel redundant. It does. But Xavion has been so damn good through these first 3 weeks. And if I know as a coach that, oh yeah, Xavion is also a really good blocker. If I know as a coach that even though he's not the biggest guy, he will block anyone's ass off. He's been the best blocking wide receiver on our team, by the way. If I know that, I don't want to take him off the field. Let's go back to the Florida game. We were just focusing on the Clemson game. Let's go to the Florida Gators game and what he did in this game. Okay. Caught the touchdown, and I shared a clip. It's kind of been passed around on Twitter that the route he ran was the same exact route that Justin Jefferson went viral for this past weekend versus the Atlanta Falcons. It was the same exact thing. I could play it here in just a moment. But Xavion actually has some high-end wide receiver skills. But every wide receiver that comes to LSU has some high-end wide receiver skill. If not, Cortez Hankton would never recruit you. It's those little things that matter. Yes, the touchdown was big that Xavion scored. It gave us 6 points, seven if you include the extra point. But what about the block that T-Bob Hebert tweeted out, whole lot of sauce tweeted out, everybody tweeted out, that he had on Kermani McClain, where he put him through the core of the earth to give Caden Durham the edge to get us into better field goal range? What about that block? We don't talk about that block. So Xavion was responsible for the first 10 points we scored in the game. The first 10. It was him. He did it. Now it was the whole team, but he had the two big plays. I don't know if Ramos makes that field goal. That block gave us 7 extra yards we wouldn't have had. And it wouldn't have just taken a good block. It needed to be an exceptional block where you put Kermani McClain into the turf. 10 points, hustle plays, one wide receiver route that every receiver would want. Cool. But it's the extra shit that matters. It really, really, really does matter. That's why I wanted to give him a glow up showing the Justin Jefferson clip. Now, I did get a text saying, hey, are you really thinking he is as good as Justin Jefferson? No, that's not my point. Not my point at all. It's just I like it when guys get to have their shine when they're doing all the other little things that we need to do to win games. Oh, yeah, there's still one more little thing that I'm saving here before we get to all your comments. We're rolling. We're cruising versus Florida. And we finally get a really good run design blocked in the red zone. Juwan Johnson carries it, and he fumbles it. Florida's getting ready to recover it. But guess who hustles to try and get the fumble? It's Xavion Thomas. He jumps on the pile to keep the ball loose, and eventually Aaron Anderson recovers it. Didn't have to do that. Put his body on the line. A lot of injuries happen when loose balls are on the ground. Xavion Thomas gets the damn job done. He gets it done. I love him. My favorite player on the team is number zero. Okay? It's ironic that his number is zero when the truth is his number should be 99 because that's the amount of things he does to help our team win. And it really is a good idiom for what we were talking about a minute ago. yes, Xavion Thomas at quite a few different schools would have a gazillion touchdowns, a gazillion catches like he had a few years ago on a bad Mississippi State team. But no, he, a lot like a guy by the name of Jeray Jenkins, was a three-star who was overlooked and really bought in to what it means to be an LSU Tiger. And like Jeray Jenkins, going into last year, no one really had a lot of Xavion Thomas hype. We loved him. Had a somewhat disappointing year. And then going into this past season, the story was about Nick and Berrion and Aaron. And Chris was at SEC Media Days. So far, Xavion has been the most impactful wide receiver on our team alongside Aaron and Berrion. Just depends on your definition of impact. Okay. But he just does so many little things to help your team win. So, yes, there are probably times where Xavion doesn't like being an LSU Tiger, and he could probably think of many schools that he can go to and be the number one guy. But he settled into his role. And now he's flourishing. Now he's exceeding what we expected from him this year. And that's what companies are looking for from their employers. What all can you do? How much value can you bring to our company? Because the truth is, we could still be winning games without Xavion. But him being here helps us win more games. Okay? I'm not saying he's a Malik Nabers or anything like that. But it's a good lesson. It's a good lesson. Okay? Do what is asked of you and more. Okay? Even if at times you don't like it, you should do it. Okay? And Xavion is really bought in. He's really bought in. And here's something else that's very interesting. And we'll discuss this more into detail on tomorrow's show. Because I have a guest coming on tomorrow that could really speak to what we're talking about here. There are so many guys on this team that have fully bought in to this season, okay? And I understand what's really pushing my algorithm right now is me talking negatively about the offense. I don't just want this to be a negative chat. I want to be positive because this team is 3-0, and I want you to understand how many people are sacrificing a lot for this team to be 3-0, from staffers to actual players on the field, okay? And some of this involves the Diego Pavia stuff that went on today, but there's so many guys on this team that could do something really selfish, and they're not going to do it because they really do believe we can go and win this whole thing. So, you know, we'll talk more about it tomorrow, but the fact that we have a lot of fourth-year guys that don't have red shirts, really putting their ass on the line for this team, I just want it to be known that I appreciate it. And I hope a lot of our fans do appreciate it. Obviously, part of the analysis business is being honest about what's going right and what's going wrong with this team. But the truth is, I'm very happy we're 3-0, and I'm going to try and be as positive as I can with some of my analysis. So before we get into the first topic here today, I want to welcome in LSU Monster. Alexander says, I'm not sure Xavion will be an NFL receiver, but he's a good college one. Hey, if you're good on special teams, you're going to find a way on a team. And Xavion is a really good special teamer. Okay? Don't go all Cobble on us. The funny thing about the whole Cobble saga is he is one of the most positive people you could be around. Like I said, I don't know Cobble too well. I've been in plenty of press situations with them, and we know each other. But I that was the weirdest thing. It's like normally his questions aren't like the super hard-hitting Grantland Rice journalism, Pablo Torre types of journalism questions, which makes the BK response that much bizarre. But, I mean, that's water under the bridge now. I like Michael Cobble a lot. I do. Okay? But – you know, one last thing on Xavion before we go. I do want it to be clear that I am very biased towards him because I screamed for LSU to offer him out of high school. I really thought he was that good. I really, really, really did. And I've shared it. My diehard PHLers know this, but I've shared this a gazillion times that I thought his high school tape was so damn good, like truly spectacular. And I'm so glad that his journey is back with LSU and that he's sacrificing a lot to be on this team as a role player. But now he's starting to become even more than just that. But the talent has always been there. So it's also one of those things where if you actually sat down and watched his high school tape, and I remember this, you know, I remember this clear as day, who really put me on to him in high school was one of his high school coaches. I was sitting in a Twitter space, and his high school, it was like in a high school assistant where he went into a Twitter space and said, "Hey, I understand, like, I'm super biased towards this, but Xavion Thomas is a stud. He is a stud." And he was clear. It's like, he's one of my guys, but he is a stud. Just remember the name. And I was like, okay. I just think he's just spewing something. But I was like, okay, let me go look at him. And I was like, wow. I was like, wow. So there you go. I'm a big Xavion Thomas stan, as many of you know. So, you know, I had such a high grade on him out of high school. The only guys in Louisiana I thought were better players than him were Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Adam is the number 3 ranked guy in Louisiana. And obviously Aaron was in that same class. He's a better player than Xavion, but still, that's how high I was on him. So really excited. Okay. Really freaking excited that Xavion's having a big season. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the offense. This is one of the worst LSU offenses I have ever seen. It is really, really, really bad. Okay. And I'm not just saying that for clicks. That's why I did a whole positive 16-minute open on one player. Okay. And Garrett is starting to take a lot of the brunt of this. And the interception was indeed very bad. It was so, so, so bad. And obviously the play calling has been beaten into the ground about what we're actually doing wrong. I do appreciate that LSU found the answer to Florida in the third quarter of that game. And honestly, we owe Deshaun Spears quite a bit because his pick six gave us an elongated time to get the right play calls in. And, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod. It did help us collaborate and get us a few calls that really got us going. So, you know, that was a very underrated play, not necessarily because of the touchdown, but it was one less possession our putrid offense didn't have to have. And yes, the Garrett pick was bad. Before I get into the offense, this was actually the second topic. I skipped one here. Let me go ahead. Come back to this. Okay. I want to give Brian Kelly some credit as well, because I have been very critical of BK this year. Okay. We're burning way too many timeouts as non-time saving mechanisms. That needs to get cleaned up. It's really bad coaching. And so that's not all on BK. It really isn't, but we got to quit doing that. You know, burning timeouts on special teams, all that. It's getting old. It really is. It should not be happening at this stage of everybody's season. And I understand we're only in the week 3, but this is a continuation of a bunch of penalties we had when we had the football. Okay. So that all needs to stop. I do give Brian Kelly a lot of credit because, you know, he and I view analytics very similar. Like we have very similar views on fourth down aggressiveness. I want to be more aggressive on fourth down compared to not being aggressive. He made some really, really, really conservative fourth down calls. Okay. And they worked. There was a lot of fourth and ones you should never punt on. He did. And it was the right decision. Okay. It was bold. Do I think he makes those decisions if the Clemson mistake does not happen? Probably not. So it shows you that he is learning on the fly and he is going with his gut, which a lot of coaches do too often. You should be more aggressive on fourth down. But right now, what those fourth down bots don't include, and I say fourth down bots, but a bot is just simply what the algorithm says what you should do, okay, or the math or the calculator or whatever. What is not included in those bots is us having an absolutely putrid offensive line, which is so critical on fourth and short situations to have, okay? And by the way, Kaden Durham is a good short yardage back, but it would be nice if we had an RB2 that had some size, okay? And then we also, on fourth downs, a lot of fourth down conversions are quarterback keepers. Obviously, we don't have that. QB run game is big in short yardage situations, okay? So, you know, I would not mind if for the rest of the season we continue to be very conservative on fourth down. Now, obviously, it depends on certain situations, but I do think Brian Kelly's going to have that mantra moving forward that we should kick more often. We do have a good punter. We do have a very good kicker. So, you know, I stand behind Brian Kelly on that. I do think he needs to be a little bit more flexible on it. The fourth and one punt when Bauer Sharp was short on a fourth down, which I think he actually should have gotten there. We probably needed a better block from Nick. And, you know, you would like to see Bauer Sharp get that yard right there, or the 2 yards. He got 1 yard. I give BK a lot of credit because I probably would have just gone for it there. But he decided to punt, and it was the right decision. Okay. But now we get to the offense. Okay. It's so bad. This is the worst LSU offensive line ever. It is the worst. It's so bad. I wish I could be positive about it. The only positives I could say is, number one, they are playing very hard. They are trying. I could also say that Braylon Moore is indeed a very good center. Tyree Adams has done fine through 3 weeks. Fine. He is an SEC starting left tackle in the league. Now, is he a high-end left tackle? No, but he's doing fine, okay? Thompson, I do want to issue an apology. I kept calling Thompson Shanahan in our first offensive film study. My apologies to the Thompson film study. I included it in part two, this apology. Your son's name is Josh Thompson. The family's name is Josh Thompson. It's a Thompson name. So my apologies. It's on me. But he does wear number 56. He is from a northern educational institution like Liam Shanahan. So it's my apology. It's all on me. I'm going to try not to do it again. But Josh Thompson has had some brutal matchups. Caleb Banks and Peter Woods. It's really tough. We've also put him in bad spots versus those guys. It also does not help him that Weston Davis is on track to being the worst LSU starting offensive lineman ever, per the PFF grades, okay? Now, here's what's crazy about it, is last year we had two different starting offensive linemen have the worst seasons in the PFF era, modern era, in DJ Chester and Paul Mbenga. Weston Davis's PFF grades are way worse than those two last year. And once again, it's a small sample size, only 3 weeks into the season, and you can make a case we've already played the two best defensive lines we will play all season. But that does not mean the rest of the defensive lines aren't good. Okay? We got Dylan Stewart coming up. All right? It's going to stay difficult. But Weston Davis has been bad. He has been very bad. He's been the worst. Okay? And then at left guard, we're trying different things. You know, we tried Paul Mbenga. We're trying Cohen Echols. Cohen Echols had a tough game. Tough game in the snaps he actually played. The one guy who's having a very good season, he won't be first team all SEC, but you can make a case he should be. Connor Lue of Auburn is probably the best center in America. But Braylon Moore is keeping this together, where it was the opposite last year. We had four overall good starting offensive linemen. Will was exceptional, as many of you know, but our center was terrible. Now it's the opposite, okay? So it's important for me to be a little bit more blunt about this because it really is a DEFCON 1 situation. It's bad. It's really, really, really bad. The film is bad. The PFF grades are bad. The yard per play numbers are terrible. A lot of the big explosive plays we're getting are garbage time, late kind of plays, that's unacceptable. That is unacceptable, okay? And it's important for us to be honest about it, okay? It is important for us to be brutally honest about it, okay? And I will say that based on my knowledge of how practices went in the spring, the fact that LSU didn't go out and get a right tackle, number one, there weren't many available. We had already gotten two of the best offensive linemen in the portal. But to think, based on how practices went with Weston Davis, that this was going to work versus Peter Woods and, no, not Peter Woods, it would be TJ Parker, but still, and Tyreek Sapp, he's getting torched. He's getting torched. And it's really bad. It's I cannot state it enough. It's really bad, which is why in this last film study, I defended Garrett Nussmeier in the interception. Okay, it was third in Ponchatoula. There was a holding call that already happened, which would have made it third and 37. Florida accepts that penalty to get us out of field goal range. The interception was bad by Garrett Nussmeier, but I get it. He's probably fed up. He's probably fed up. He should never throw it. But, you know, he's trying to make something happen, which he shouldn't have. You should never make that throw. But this is the second consecutive year where we have multiple unacceptable levels of starters on our offensive line. It's unacceptable. It should never happen. It should never, 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 never happen. You know, what made a lot of these LSU offensive lines of old so good is that we didn't have a star, but we didn't have weak links. We did not have weak links. We had good links everywhere. Now, were there some bad offensive linemen that started on really good LSU teams? Sure. But I can't think of a situation where over a two-year period, we have had as many putrid starters on the offensive line. Okay? Now, I understand this is going to get a lot of people angry that care a lot about LSU football, which is why, you know, I started this thing off positively. But I cannot in good conscience, knowing that the Southeastern Conference is oftentimes a line of scrimmage league, willingly go any further but thinking that LSU is a true national championship contender unless our offensive line play gets better. It's just going to be too much to overcome over a college football playoff period. But if the line play does get better, my tune on this will change. Okay, it will change. Now, let's go to Layton. Not to prematurely ask and change topics, but shouldn't Nuss sit this weekend? Curious why BK indicated that he wouldn't rest until after Ole Miss. Okay, this is a very good topic, and there are a lot of respected LSU media members who have written about this. I saw Hunt Palmer have a column about it. Hunt, if you're watching this, you're more than welcome to hop on. He had a column on it. I didn't read it. I saw Preston Guy share it. I've heard this, and there's plenty of people that say, well, let's rest Garrett up versus Southeastern and see what happens, okay? And the main crux of the argument is his torso is hurt. Let's rest him, get him fully healthy for the Ole Miss game the following week. Now, I would tend to think that line of logic is sound. But in this instance, where our LSU offense is not doing jack diddly squat, we need the reps. We do. We need the reps with who we are going to roll with the rest of the season. Okay? And the reason why the reps have so much more value now is that we changed so much in the spring, in the fall, how the LSU offense is going to operate. Okay? This has been a major problem over the past couple of seasons. Things that we thought were going to be good and or good enough have turned out to not be great. Okay? And there's a few that need to get ironed out over the next couple of weeks. So we will play Southeastern this weekend. They are not a great team. Louisiana Tech beat them 24-0. Now, transitive property can get dangerous, okay? But we have got to go out there and find a way to get this offense clicking. This would be a game you would think that the offense would be able to start clicking. Then we go to Ole Miss, who has the worst defense in the SEC. When I tell you that the Ole Miss defense did some of the dumbest, most undisciplined things I've ever seen a defense do in an SEC game versus Arkansas, I truly do mean it. Like, it was worse, that defense, than some of the things that we would do in the end of the Orgeron tenure or some of the Matt House things. It really was that bad. And versus a semi-experienced, well, very experienced quarterback in Talen Green, he torched him. Now, Talen is a phenomenal quarterback, but Garrett's better. We should be able to dominate these next 2 weeks. We need the reps. I really do need it. We need the game reps. And I also think this would be good for Garrett because I do think he took the Louisiana Tech game a little less seriously. Okay? So, obviously, the first thing would be, how injured is Garrett Nussmeier's torso? How banged up is he actually? Now, if it's a lot worse than what anyone thinks it actually is, then yes, he should rest. He should. But at the same time, quarterback is a rep and rhythm position. So if you rest him versus Southeastern, he would be getting a break before Ole Miss, and then he would be getting another break before we play Vanderbilt. I just don't think that's the right thing to do. Now, if you want to pull him after the second quarter, if we, you know, open up a lead, sure. But I would also understand the logic. It's not the worst idea. It's just one that I don't agree with. And it's funny because a few years ago, before the Grambling game happened with Jaden, I thought Garrett should have started the Grambling game for that same bit of logic. I thought Jaden was going to be fantastic in his final season at LSU. I didn't think he was going to do what he did. But I thought the Harbaugh approach to what he did a few years ago with McCarthy, starting one of the quarterbacks a week two to give him some experience just to see what you have, I think that would have behooved LSU in that situation. And the same thing could be true of Michael Van Buren. If you start him, you could see what you have. See if he actually is a real deal. I know it's going to give you a better idea of how you want the program to look going into next year when you're going to need a new quarterback. And it's going to be hard to get one as good as Garrett. It just is. But, you know, I'm for giving Michael Van Buren some extended reps. I am. Okay? Now, let's go to Samuel. Everybody, welcome Samuel to the channel. I think you've been in here before, Samuel. Good to see you. You got a nice suit on, too. Not to say Garrett shouldn't be the starter, because he definitely should be, but I think this offense could benefit heavily from a mobile quarterback. I would be interested to see it. Okay. As a film guy, I do get this question quite a bit about quarterback mobility. I'll answer that right after this.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaBoardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaBoardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaBoardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
All righty. So first thing, I saw something Steve Spurrier said, and look, I'm not always been the biggest Spurrier guy, but he said something that was fascinating about Brian Kelly just tearing Garrett Nussmeier's ass up, on the sideline after the interception. I love seeing that, okay? It depends on how experienced your quarterback actually is. And Spurrier was like, why aren't we doing that? Why wasn't Lagway getting that same treatment? I like a coach that's willing to rip apart his veterans or his starters or whatever. So, you know, we get into the mobile QB debate, okay? Does Garrett Nussmeier hurt our run game because we don't have a mobile QB option? Yes. Every bit of analytical studying shows you that running backs produce at a higher rate if the quarterback in the backfield can run. We've seen it in the NFL. There are plenty of running backs who have had career seasons next to Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, and Jaden Daniels, okay? Unless you're in a Shanahan scheme, it doesn't matter who's at quarterback. Okay, so yes, a mobile quarterback would help. But let's take a look at the LSU quarterback room and evaluate the mobility of it. Colin Hurley's probably a little faster than Garrett, but that's not really his game. Running isn't really his game. It is something. It is. He does have juice. What about Michael Van Buren? How good of a runner is he? QB draw game was big for Van Buren, and QB draws would desperately help out our offense, but I don't think he is as explosive of a runner as one would like to think. He does have some mobility to his game. And then, of course, you have Juwan Johnson, who just can't throw. Right? It's just not it. But he did move to quarterback, so he knows the offense. He knows how to run the offense at the quarterback position. It's just not something that's going to work because nobody's going to respect his throwing at all. And right now, Juwan Johnson is playing too valuable of a role for our team as the RB2 screen guy, and so on and so on. But there is a different discussion with Juwan about how many touches we should actually give him, because so far he's not really done a whole lot with the touches that we've given him. It's not entirely his fault, but you know, it is what it is at this point. So Garrett should remain the quarterback. Now, yes, a mobile option, you can make a case, gives every offense a higher floor if your offense is indeed bad. Okay, so what do I mean by that? Well, if your offense sucks and you have a QB who can just scramble out of situations and make shit happen, it does help. It really does. And I said I would limit cursing, so I'm going to do my best to not do that again. My apologies. But actual game live streams, as you guys know, that does open things up a little bit for the tongue here. The truth, though, is yes. It is true, when your offensive environment is sucking, a mobile QB can make it look good. Look no further than Lenore Sellers. A lot of South Carolina fans who watch every snap of South Carolina football, they have never, ever, 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 ever liked their play calling. Dow Loggins, who's now at Appalachian State, they hated him. Hated him. They hate Shula now, their current offensive coordinator. Sellers goes out, the whole thing falls apart. So, yes, a mobile quarterback could raise the floor of a lot of different things. But I just don't know if there's someone, like, I don't think Van Buren's speed is going to unlock our offense that much more than what you might be thinking theoretically could happen. I didn't say that smoothly at all. The first game is probably going to work because there's no film and how the offense would look with him. But over time, I do think Garrett still gives our offense a higher ceiling, even with some of the mistakes that might come along with him as your quarterback. So there you go. Now, I got a question here from LA Mom about Pop Houston. I'm obviously very excited about it. I'm very high on him. You know, we're still so far away. I don't want me being very high on Pop Houston lead the PHL Nation into thinking he's actually going to come here when quarterbacks flip commits all the time. But it is different than Bryce Underwood. He's not the can't-miss five-star guy. He's not from Michigan. He's from Louisiana. His commitment video showed how much he freaking loves LSU. This LSU push, you know, many thought he was going to USC. A lot of insiders thought he was going to USC. So that means LSU showed a lot of interest. And another thing is, you know, Garrett's younger brother is in the same recruiting class, Colton. He's 6'3", has a cannon, lefty. He obviously is very interested in coming to LSU too. But that shows you how much LSU wants Pop Houston, and Pop Houston wants to be at LSU. And of course, you have Elijah Haven, the guy who is a can't-miss five-star quarterback in this class. I will tell you, and this is going to remain consistent, it's the same thing that happened with my Harold Perkins analysis and my Bryce Underwood analysis. My analysis of you as a player does not change whether or not you actually come to LSU. Okay. I did like Pop Houston more than the other two. I did. I'm not just saying that because he's going to LSU. I'm just not. But, you know, I evaluate quarterbacks differently than 247 does. I highly recommend you listen to our interview this past Thursday with Cooper Patagna. He is a longtime friend of mine. He's one of the top evaluators in the country in the media space because he actually did it for Nick Saban in Alabama and a bunch of other places. And he takes evaluation very seriously. You can listen to our back and forth about the quarterbacks. This was before Pop Houston ever committed. So if you want timestamps on that, you can go there. Him picking LSU changes nothing for me, though, about how I feel about him as a player. He's good. He's good. Okay. People want Toscano back? People want Toscano back? Yeah, he killed it last Tuesday. We'll get him on again next Tuesday. King MJ. It's okay. You can mention those coaches by name. And look, it's a Brad Davis question. That's it. Okay. Now, this is a danger with talking about Brad Davis because I know how much the players love this guy. They really, really, really do love him. Okay. But we need better results. We just do. We just do. Okay. You know? We just do. Like, I just kind of want that to just, before I share what I'm going to say next, is simply put, you are right in your frustration. All right. And I will tell you that I do think Brian Kelly is growing a bit tired of all of it. Okay. He is growing a bit tired of it because Brian Kelly was well within his right to chop some heads off based on our offensive performance last year. Okay. He was well within his right to do it, but he decided to run it back for continuity sakes. And it's looking like that was a mistake. The only shakeup we had was bringing in a new tight ends coach. And that's it. That's it. And that was a move Brian Kelly had to make because our tight ends coach left to go to Houston. Okay. So it's a thing where Brian Kelly wants to be patient with this. He's been patient. And to be honest, I would be fed up too with a lot of things if I was in BK's shoes. Now, some of it does fall on him. Okay. The thing that I would have done if I were Brian Kelly, and I said it at the time, and I'll say it again. Play calling is truly an experience game. I think there are some positions that you can coach and be successful at with less experience. Okay, those positions are defensive line coach. You notice our defensive tackle play has been phenomenal up to this point. We have a guy who's never really coached this position before at this high a level. Kyle Williams has done one hell of a job. I do think defensive line coaches transition a little better, linebacker coaches, running back coaches, receiver coaches. But I do think the other positions, I want a little bit more experience. I would have this offseason hired an experienced analyst who has play calling experience. We don't really have one on the roster. We don't. We don't. Okay. I'm drawing a blank because this wasn't in my prep. And I normally do just bullet point preps. I don't like to write out scripts or prompter. And when I'm looking up here, I'm looking at the actual YouTube charts, what it's telling me about viewership and dropping in and out so I can know which topics to get to. his name slips my mind, but you know, we referenced 2019 LSU. Let me, I want to do him justice. Okay. Let me, okay. This isn't going to tell me what I needed. Because I really do want to do this man justice. Okay. I got it. It's Jorge Munoz. He coached at UL, and they brought him in with 2019 LSU. Okay. And he is a really talented coach. Very, very, very talented coach. All right. So he came over in 2018 as an LSU offensive analyst. All right. And I'm going to show you this would have been the kind of guy that I would have brought in this offseason if I were Brian Kelly. All right. I'm not saying he should have brought in this coach specifically. He's at, I didn't know this. I'm serious. He's at UL right now. And they're obviously, it is what it is, what's happening there. But you could see when he came over, he had some offensive coordinator experience. He had some play calling experience as an OC QB coach, passing game coordinator QB coach, OC at Eastern Illinois. All right. Now, how, you know, this probably isn't the best example. He could have never called plays before, and this could just be a terrible example. I was trying to think of some analysts in the past that had play calling experience that we could add. You know, another guy that helped us out during the more so the early Orgeron part of the tenure was Steve Kragthorpe. Okay. So he came over, he got Parkinson's, but that experience helped. You know, he had actual coaching play calling experience. You go look at a lot of the offensive analysts that we have. Yeah, we have some respected offensive minds. Tim Merte is there, but I would have brought in someone else to help with our game plans. Okay. You know, I was really high on Lance Guidry coming in from Miami. He had one terrible year. It is a very unforgivable year how bad the Miami defense was, because they did have freaking Cam Ward, who is still underrated in my mind of how good he was last year. But before that, Lance Guidry was a really good defensive coordinator. Pretty much every other year, he called plays. It's helped having him there. It is mostly Blake Baker's scheme, of course, but and more so even Baker's scheme. It's also just Mansoor Delane being like the number one NFL corner going into the draft this next cycle. But I like having play calling experience. Guys that have actually been between the headsets, who has been in the crossfire. Okay. We just don't have a lot of that. We just don't. And I might be wrong on that. I've looked up all the bios of all the offensive analysts and all that stuff. Maybe that would help. I don't know. I'm kind of grasping at straws here trying to figure this out at this point. Okay. Yeah, and this is a really good point by Jay Smax, that the best offensive lineman is the one that's not coached by Brad. He came in. All right. So let's go through this, because this was something I was thinking of last night. And I even dove so deep to see how Kimo Makinele is doing. Who remembers him? He transferred. He moved to defensive line with LSU his final season. He's actually starting at West Virginia, and he's not been good. But I shared that because I was like, what if, and he wasn't a Brad Davis recruit, but what if he went somewhere new? Well, he kind of sort of was, but whatever. If he went somewhere new, is he playing way better than when he was here, right? And he's not been that good per the PFF grades. But yeah, I mean, it is an interesting point. Like, how many offensive linemen has he recruited that has come here and truly been great? Okay. Now, I will put a lot on Kerryus Kern being very good because I truly do believe in my eval that he's going to be really good. Okay. But, you know, a lot of these guys just aren't doing anything. They're not what we want them to be. Okay. And it's honestly just an overall thing, right? A lot of the guys that have been the better players on our team have mostly been portal guys. Okay. So we do need to evaluate our overall process of development, but also just our own high school evals, and then ask ourselves, hey, what are we doing wrong? What are we doing wrong? Are we doing anything wrong? Is it just bad luck? I don't know. It's a good question to ask. It really is. And it's an interesting point by Jace Max. But yeah, you know, you go through like some of these other offensive linemen that were kind of three-star dart throws. I liked Kari Lee a lot. He's on scholarship. What's it hurt to give him a shot to see what he can do versus Southeastern? What about Ori Williams, Ethan Callaway? Ori was a borderline four-star. Ethan Callaway was a four-star. And what happened with that? I don't know. We had a guest on from Jacksonville where Solomon Thomas is from, and he swore up and down that he's going to be good. He's obviously been hurt. We'll see what happens with his development. But I would tend to think, as far as in Brad's defense, over time, if you recruit top 100 offensive linemen, they're going to turn out to be good players in time. Let's go to Alexander. Lance Hurd got better. True. What I would push back on Alexander is Lance sucked last year. And this year, he's arguably been the best left tackle in the SEC. He's been good. Or he's been mostly good. I'll put it that way. But no, he's been pretty good. Tennessee is happy with what they have. But that also goes back to system, right? The offense was still good enough to make the playoff last year, despite Lance having a tough season. Okay. CJ Daniels looks better than he ever did at LSU for Miami. I don't know if I fully agree with that. Some of that is ACC competition. Carson Beck's a really good quarterback. Shannon Dawson's a really good offensive coordinator. Some of it's that, but CJ was good for us last year. It's just for some reason, Garrett was really good connecting with Aaron. Garen was really good at connecting with Kyron. CJ just had so many close misses, but it wasn't that to me that I think at Miami he's just been a completely different and better player than what he was at LSU. I honestly thought CJ was very good when he was here. But he was frustrated with his role, and I get that. And both parties were ready to move on. So, you know, that's part of it with the mercenary stuff. And the last non-Louisiana wide receiver that balled for us was CJ. CJ was the first wide receiver since Terrence Tolliver from out of state to catch 40 passes in a season, okay? Notice that said wide receiver. That does not include tight end, obviously, with that and Mason. But you get the point. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. And on top of that, I'll be on with the great Blake Ruffino at 7:30 on his channel later this evening. Okay? Now, if you're watching this, I'm telling you right now, nobody loves sports betting better than me. I'm still looking for a title sports partner, whether it be fantasy or anything like that. And we have a mini partnership with Fast Draft Fantasy. Sign up now, use promo code Carter. But if you are Sleeper, DraftKings, FanDuel, any of it, I use all of them, hit me up. DMs are open. I'm all about that life. I love sports betting. And it's funny I bring that up because I do get a lot of sports betting questions. Who should I play? who should I not play? I'm just going to tell you right now, a lot of this is guessing, educated guesses. I rarely make wagers. I really do rarely make wagers unless I feel really confident about a wager. Okay. Now, I did bet LSU this past weekend to cover versus Florida. Some of it was a bet against Billy when the line moved from 9.5 down to 6.5. And it's funny because last week I was like, yeah, I think Florida's going to keep it close. And I kept saying Florida, Florida, Florida. And then when it was time to actually place a wager, I was like, I'm going to go opposite. Charles Alexander in the building. Wasn't my favorite play ever. I didn't feel great clicking it. But I did. Now, I think as far as sports betting is concerned and what you should play as far as college football is concerned, it's difficult. You don't know a lot of things, right? It's become harder to place these wagers. I was really in on Tennessee 3.5. I liked Vanderbilt 4.5. You know, I do more sports betting prediction stuff. I do a weekly hit in Mississippi, ironically. And they ask for picks, and for the most part, I've been pretty good. I really liked Vanderbilt last week. So there you go. I think for me, though, as far as if I've learned anything as far as college football is concerned, whether it be sports betting or not sports betting, is to be very weary of the first-year starter at quarterback. Be very weary of it, okay? Lagway has stunk. And as bad as Lagway has been, Arch Manning has been worse. Now, Arch hasn't thrown games away the same way Lagway threw a game away versus LSU, but he's been bad. He has been so, so, so bad. See here. Mike says bad beats with SVP was unbelievable last night. John, I appreciate you. No, you're the real MVP. So this is a good question from Chance. Why didn't LSU pursue Hardy in the portal, the running back for ULM, who's a stud at Missouri right now? Okay. So this is a good question. And this is probably a better question for a guy like Austin Thomas, who has how much it would have cost to bring in Hardy. The answer is simple. He wanted to go somewhere where he was going to be a lead back. We would have had to pay him with lead back money. And Caden Durham is our lead back. So, yeah, it's harder to get an RB2 in the portal. I do think so. But, yeah, it would be nice. It would be nice to have him on this team. It's just what I prefer Ahmad Hardy or Jack Pyburn or Patrick Payton. I would probably prefer those two over Hardy, okay? Especially now that Jack Pyburn is going to be a fullback. I'm kidding. But, yeah. Let's go to Wade. Carter, did you see that Vanderbilt is favored against LSU in the matchup predictor? Not sure if that means a lot, just weird. Okay, so let's talk about that. All right, so there is a viral post going around. I could pull it up. I think it had Vanderbilt a 51% favorite of beating LSU. Let me see if I could find the post. I can't find it, but I know exactly what you're talking about. So it basically says at this point that Vanderbilt has a better chance of beating us than based on their analytics. Well, they are at home. That is an 11 a.m. kickoff. That would be our first 11 a.m. kickoff. We do play them the week after we play South Carolina. We'll see what South Carolina looks like. But what analytics say oftentimes is that your offense is more important than your defense. And it does make sense, right? Most of the best college football playoff teams have the highest rated offenses, and a lot of them can still get in if their defense just isn't as good, right? And basically, they are saying, hey, look, your offense is terrible. And offensive performances are a little bit more predictive. Okay. So, yes, the LSU defense is truly elite. I do think they are by far the best defense in the SEC. I really do think so. But Clemson's offense has sucked since we've played them. Sucked. Florida's offense has also sucked. So, I do think our defense will continue to be elite. It's just impossible to deny that. But Vanderbilt's offense has been very good. And if we were to play Vanderbilt tomorrow, they would be by far the best offense that we have played all season. Okay. And they're at home and all that. So it does not shock me that it says that, even though Vanderbilt is barely ranked and we're ranked number 3 in all the country, which is what I said earlier in the show today, is that I do think since we had such a high profile win in week 1, that our current ranking of being the number 3 team in the country is a little overrated. And that's fine. That's fine if I say that, or at least I think so. A lot of you might not like that. Every team in the SEC has scored 24 points at least once. In fact, over half the league has scored 24 points in all 3 of the games that they have played. We have not scored 24 points once. Not once. Even with the pick 6 and 5 interceptions, we have not gotten to 24 points. Okay. YouTube taking an L. Come on, Jason Max. Jace Max, the best shorts editor. We're bringing him back next week. Taking a break from the shorts, man. Shorts. And Jace Max, I'll call you. We're going to post some fire shite next week to get ready for Ole Miss. Shorts wear me out. And Jace Max is the only guy that is the only reason I have a shorts presence right now. I did release a Xavion film study with Ashanti and Justin Jefferson. Check it out. But, you know, I see, dude, some of these short-form college football creators that are just saying shit just to get clicks. I'm like, oh, God. What do I think about your comment up here? Let's see what you got. Yeah, Eccles' PFF grade isn't good, but you should be more concerned about Weston Davis. Eccles makes a little bit more sense, his PFF grade's not being good, because he's not starting. You know, he's coming in cold off the bench. But Weston Davis, y'all, it wasn't a mystery that he was getting torched in practice. I don't know how many more times I could say that. Like, he simply could not block Jack Pyburn. Jack Pyburn ate him up a lot of the times. I would say probably 80% of the times he ate him alive. And as good as Jack is, you shouldn't be getting beat that many times. I can understand if that was J.J. Watt you're going up against, or Myles Garrett, but it's frustrating. It really is frustrating. Alexander thinks Arkansas beats Notre Dame. Oh, they got to beat Memphis first. That's a tough matchup. Memphis is going to be tough. There's a lot of geographical reasons as to why the Memphis game is going to be tough. Tyler, what's up, man? Hey, so my mother-in-law locked herself out of the house. So I might have to go take care of that before I do Blake's show. No, I think she's going to go do it. But it is amazing as a society, like how many times people lock themselves out of their house. You ever notice that? It happens a lot. A whole heck of a lot. Let's go to Jenkins. I might not know ball, but it does seem like our run plays are slow developing. Seems like we've been taking our time handing it off. Okay, that's a good question. Yes, there is some truth to that. So when you run outside zone, it is a longer developing handoff, right? You take the snap and it's a stretch, right? You're stretching it out. And it's amazing how bad our success rates are on outside zone. Some of it is predictability. Also, outside zone is a play that sounds better in theory, but we just don't have the dudes now to block it. But the problem is, and it's why I spent so much time talking about the offensive line, is that I don't know if we could run the ball if Kyle Shanahan was calling our plays right now, right? I know this comes off as a Joe Sloan defense. It's not. You know, our run game play calling could help out what we have going on right now. But the truth is, I'm not sure if we can block anybody. I'm serious. I'm just not sure if we can. And I don't know if that's getting fixed anytime soon. I really, really, really don't know. Right? Like, there's this thing that college football players get better. And it is true. College football players do develop into better college football players. It's just oftentimes the players that have not produced early in their careers at all, really, oftentimes don't end up producing at any point in their career. Okay, good example of this, and this isn't me knocking on him because he actually has done some production, is Chris Hilton, right? Chris has dominated in practice. He's had other years where he's looked unfreaking believable in practice. Staffers saying, hey, this is a Chris Hilton year. Versus Air, he looks really good, okay? But when it actually is time to play the game of football, it's clear that there are guys like Xavion who do a lot of different things to affect winning. And then there's guys like Chris, who is a true boom or bust kind of guy. When he's on, we're hitting explosives offensively. And explosives offensively are far more important than any other stat in all of football. Okay? Chris gives us that. But the problem is, the times he has really given us that has been in bowl games. And bowl games have, time in and time out, constantly shown us something about players that probably isn't true about that player. And then the second thing, of course, is he's never really produced in any of the prior seasons, whether it be injury or Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas blocking him or whatever. Normally, what you do early in your career is going to be a precursor for what you're going to do later in your career. Okay, so you hear that term development a lot of the times, and it's true. Your coaching, your scheme, all those things are important, but sometimes who you are as a player early in your career is just who you are. Sibley says, hats off to the Aggies for whipping Notre Dame. I don't know if they whipped them. They won by one. Sibley, you're not allowed to say that as an LSU and Texas fan. But no, for real, hats off to them. They're real players. They're really good. You can make a case that their offense is going to be the toughest we face. You can also make a case that they are the most talented offense in the SEC. I'm serious. Like, they've got dudes. Quarterback Reed playing well. Craver is a real deal. And Le'Veon Moss from Baton Rouge is good. Very good. Okay. Let's go to Oliver. Oh, Oliver, damn it. Damn it. Oh, God. Oliver, dude. We've failed our youth in this country. We have failed it. I mean, what are we going to do? The game's gone. We're losing recipes. I mean, what the hell is this, Oliver? Like, I thought I recruited the best of the best to watch my channel. I thought I found the best group of LSU fans on the planet to watch me. Oh, God, the game's gone. The game's gone. The game's gone. God, dog. I can't freaking believe this. Damn it. This is worse. This is worse than anything I've said tonight about the offensive line. Anything. God bless, the game is gone. The game is so far gone. Oh, my God. Dude, this society, dude. This society is pissing me the freak off. Pissing me off. Game's gone, dude. Game's gone. Shit. Damn. Game's gone. Oh, my God. We went over this in the Sunday Night live stream. And what is it? What does the devil do to me today? What does it do to me today? What does it do to me? What does it do to me today? Oh, God, God, dude, the game is so far gone. We're so far gone. We're so far gone. Oh, my God, dude. I cannot believe I go on a freaking rant about this. A rant on Sunday night about this. A rant in the wee hours of the morning, Sunday night. And I see this. I see this. It sees me. Sees me. Like, this is not an act. This is not an act. I'm not even trying to go viral. I'm just a little speck in the game of YouTube. But the game is so far gone, Oliver. It's so far gone. We're done. I don't even know if I want to address this. I'm so mad at myself for allowing my, I got to go on another show soon. And I was going to log off 10 minutes ago, and then Oliver cock. And that's what it feels like in my face right now. Thinking that I thought I was going to get away from seeing the most despicable thing on YouTube. Oh my God, dude. The game is so far gone. The game is so far gone, dude. It is so far gone. Oh, man. I'm moving on. Not even going to address it. I think I'm going to piss even more people off because I didn't address what actually bothered me about Oliver. I think some of you got it in the chat. Yeah, the only thing, player X, is we've had a few penalties on special teams, and obviously Ramos is, you would like to hit a few extra kicks, but, you know, we do have a new deep snapper. It's been good. Xavion muffed one punt, but it's been mostly good. But, you know, it is nice to have Chadwick, who's a good punter. Okay, so Oliver, you're still here. I am just messing. You ask a very good question. But my goodness gracious, I cannot believe this. I cannot. Dude, we used to be a proper society. We used to be a proper society. We used to be a proper society. But what do I see? What do I see? A Man City avatar? A Man City? You, Man City? Okay. This is what I don't get. You know what, Oliver? If you're a true LSU fan, but you're also a true Man City fan, you would actually be an Alabama fan. Let me explain. Because what Man City fans are the Alabama fans that don't actually live in Alabama. That's what Man City fans are. Now, Oliver, it could be that you actually have always been a Man City fan before, you know, the Guardiola era happened, okay? Okay. And you innocently just asked a very good and simple question, okay? And I'm going to answer it, all right? But for those that were there Sunday night, we had a Chelsea fan start coming after me for whatever reason. And he didn't come after me. I went after him. And I was like, it's okay if you're a Chelsea fan, as long as you are not a Man City fan. Man City fans destroy me. And I understand some of you don't know European soccer. It's fine. But literally, that is what a Man City fan is. I am dealing with that in my own family. My cousin is married to a diehard Alabama fan who has never lived outside of Pointe-Coupee Parish. What the why are you an Alabama fan? The only reason you should ever be an Alabama fan, and you're from Louisiana, is if you are related to Devonta Smith. That is it. That is the only reason. Oh, okay, Oliver. You just made that up. Now, this does sound like a believable story. But just know this, from this point forward, any new Man City fans, you're being blocked. You're being blocked. So, look, a true story. So my cousin, who's a big PHL supporter, Cliff, and when I'm in Baton Rouge, I do my shows from Cliff's house, he is a Man City fan, okay? And in my soccer group chat, I don't have any City fans in there because, well, that's how God intended. But my cousin's a Man City fan. And so Cliff's not in here. I'll call him out on this. I asked Cliff. I said, hey, can you name two Man City players? I said, two. He couldn't name Kevin De Bruyne. I asked him who had the biggest goal in Man City and EPL history. He couldn't tell me it was Kun Aguero. But Man City fans, oh my God, dude, the Scrooge of the earth. But Oliver, if you truly were a City fan before the Guardiola era, then, well, actually, if you were 8, I don't know, you might be 11. I don't know. I honestly have no idea. But if you're a City fan, it's fine. It's fine. Erling Haaland's a good player. And obviously, they've had some goats. I was a big Touré fan. I love Touré. And obviously, you know, City denying us the EPL title, the final Klopp year it just hurts me. It really does hurt. It gives me a pain I can't locate. But then we have slot ball and all that. But there we go. So Oliver, let me know we're all good, because I don't know if I want to ever do a live stream again, because I feel like I just singled you out. But a lot of you understood the justified crash out, because I never do EPL rants. Occasionally I do for Pegasus, who's a Real Madrid fan, which could be worse, honestly. But City's worse than the Florida Gators. It really is like that for me. You know a stat that just doesn't seem real? So Georgia-Tennessee is one of the best college football games you'll ever watch on ABC. Drew a viewership number of 12.6 million people watch that game. 12.6 million. That's a big-ass number. That's a lot of freaking people. Okay? So the NBA Finals draws like 4 or 5 million per game or something like that. Chiefs-Eagles this past weekend drew 33 million people, okay? The NFL is still just so much bigger than college, okay? And, you know, I get on calls with the, like, with people who respect the channel, know the channel. And I talk to people because I want to do national media. And whether it be play-by-play or written or whatever, I'll do anything. I miss doing writing stories and deep dives and stuff like that. So I've gotten to the point where I feel like I'm good at a lot of different things for if my name is called to do something in national media or whatever. And it's funny, like, I just started an NFL channel on a whim, and it's crazy how many views I've gotten just doing NFL YouTube breakdowns, the same way I do college YouTube breakdowns. It just doesn't seem real, though, that Georgia-Tennessee, 12.6 million, Eagles-Chiefs had 20 million more people watch that game. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. All right, so Oliver said we're all good. I hope you come back, Oliver. And I'm never going to block you for a Man City thing. But next time Cliff is in here, I do. I'm going to torch him for being a City fan. Torch him. All right. That'll do it for me. We'll talk to you guys soon. We'll be live tomorrow night at 6. And one of my favorite reoccurring PHL guests will join us. To me, he's the best SEC commentator on the planet. So he'll be here with us tomorrow. Big thanks to our top super chatter of the evening. It's Leighton Lamb. Okay. Shout out to you, Xavion Thomas. And make sure you go on my Twitter account and retweet my Xavion Ashanti Justin Jefferson mashup. Let's go to American Patriot really quickly. That's not a fair comparison. How many viewers are watching the 5 college games combined? Well, that's the thing, is Eagles, Chiefs are competing against other NFL games as well. Now, it is a little bit different because it was the afternoon, somewhat standalone game, and there wasn't as many compelling games in the afternoon window as that one. So it is a little bit different, but it's so crazy. It doesn't really matter. 20 million more people, and yeah, it's just insane. It's just insane. But type Y for yes if you're going to be on the live stream tomorrow. And we'll talk to you soon. Edis! Power Hour. LSU. Boom! Big thanks to Labor Therapy. And by the way, Thomas Labor at Labor Therapy is one of the best soccer players I've ever played with. And we only did intramurals together at LSU. Tonight, we are doing... I don't know what we're doing. We were supposed to do salmon, but can't do it now. Let's call.